and all of you who are here. I'm so happy to have the total law leader. They are also here. We had an agreement with post office that he must stand all the time. Now he sits down, I can't see him. So, but it's fine. He's back now. It's okay. Times two. We are okay. Welcome, post office. They are also welcome. We have to start our meeting. I hope members, they did receive the agenda and the items which we need to discuss. But we want to propose the change of sequence in terms of the presentation. That probably start with the ECA, ICASA, and the other two. Will that be fine? We start with ECA, ICASA, and the other one. Not starting with the other ones and then the other one. Honorable Pillar. We're starting with ICASA to the other one, not the other one to the other one. It's one of the other. We will be starting with the ECA, followed with ICASA, SABO, and the one of Bolton. Is that okay?
Okay. Yes, that's fine. We would have sometimes just look at the critical deadlines, etc., of the goals, because some of them clearly have a higher priority than others. We just have to look at that. Thank you.
The order of presenting them today will not mean a priority arrangement. It's just that it was requested to start in that format. Which I agreed upon that it's fine, we can do that, it's not a problem. Probably when we finish from the briefing, then we can deal with the housekeeping matters, because I also have love letters from some of you requesting this or that. Probably we can deal with that later, when we finish the issue of things and so on. Probably without wasting time, let me hand over. Or before I go to the DM, Kambi?
The item on honor for the subject.
Thank you. I forgot about it, and then I remember when you raised your hand. I've got an apology from the minister who's attending a business meeting which is called by the president. He wanted to be here. Honorable Tebe, doing organizational work, they are by election and profit. I don't know why others are here, not to go there. And we also have an apology from Honorable Schneeman, who has an eye operation, undergoing an eye operation. And the last one is from Honorable Partner, remember? She's not well. So those are the four I'm having. Honorable Tambi?
We need to check from the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair. I thought I was going to raise the issue of the DG when I introduced the delegation, but now that it has been raised, the DG, as you know, that we have a new minister, we have bilateral with the entity, and because my thoughts and the minister are there, then we ask the DG to add endorsement on our behalf. So she's disengaging on that. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we proceed? To get the presentation. But before we do that, I just need to highlight that the ECA and the ICASA amendments already are out for public comment. the deadline which we put was in August for public submission and so on. Ordinarily, people have started with everything and then we do that. I've tried to consult some of my colleagues and the parliament processes because of the time pressures and so on. And they said, okay, we can do that. There's no problem. I'm still waiting for a confirmation whether the staff of the other two were out this weekend. They are still verifying that with the relevant newspapers and so on. If not, it means they will be out the coming weekend, the other two. With that, over to Stephanie.
Thanks, Chair, and to the honourable members. Chair, let me first introduce the team that I'm with. There on my left, we have Carol Talibon, who is our legal advisor. We have DDG Themba Phiri, whom you all know, the DDG for Policy and Strategy Development. Then right next to me is Mamizi Mphahlele, who's a chief director in ICT and economic policy. Chairperson Amasa Blozai, because one of our officials had a flight delay, who Mr. Bugela, William Bugela. That's why we also had to request that we deal with the post office later, so that when the technical question arises, he's able to respond to it. My apologies for that. Chairperson, as everybody will recall, that in 2005 we promulgated the Electronic Communications Act, and then later on we repealed the Telecommunications Act, which was in 1990. But we have repeatedly experienced challenges due to some lack of clarity in the act that were put there, which led to different role players in the industry having different interpretation of certain clauses. We therefore, Chairperson, saw it's proper that we come and present ourselves that there's a need for clarification of those areas. Critical to the areas of intervention that the bill will be talking to is the issue of the licensing framework, the issue of the radio frequency spectrum management. We all know how it is done now. And we have a responsibility as a signatory to the ITU to ensure that whatever we do is aligned to the ITU regulations. There was an issue also, Chair, on interconnection and facilities listing. I'm sure you have listened or heard most people complaining that, no, these ones, they want to create monopoly, they don't allow competition and all that. Then said it is important that as government, we ensure that competition does take place in the sector and to introduce this in the bill. Broadband definition, we decided that let us agree to define what is that we expect out of broadband. If you recall in the previous act, we even stipulated the band that we wanted. For example, we had 256 megabytes in terms of the speed of the broadband. So with that now, what we need to do is to say, okay, we agree on the definition that has been put there. But let us allow the minister to gazette the speed, because we don't want to confine ourselves on what has been there. Then when the minister, definitely in consultation with all the critical role players, see a need to say, let us change from this one and rush to another speed because of whatever challenges and needs that are there, then she or he will then gazette whatever is needed. Again, everybody has complaining, including itself, has been complaining about how USASA does things in terms of governance, the state of USASA, which is a critical regulatory agency under our department, the responsibility and the mandate that they are tasked with, which leads to them being unable to deliver on what the masses or government or yourself expect from them because of the incapacity, the challenges that are there. Then we said it's important that we stipulate it in the act that with regard to the government's challenge that are there at USASA, this is what must be fulfilled so that we are able to reach the targets or they are able to fulfill in their mind. Lastly, Chair, it is the harmonization of the competition provision with the amended principal competition law. We all know that we can't just be having laws that are contradictory to what the competition requires. the competition. So whatever we pass, we need to make it a point that they talk to each other, rather than in the ECA we have this act and then in the Competition Act we have something different. So we agree that it is important, Chair, that we take this opportunity to introduce it to the public, and through yourselves, you give us permission to go ahead with that, so that we can both meaningfully contribute towards enabling our society in terms of reaching the ICT. You will note, Chair, those that have had access to the draft bill, that there are issues that we have decided to defend. For example, Chair Patton, there was an issue that was raised for the establishment of the Spectrum Management Agency, which the white paper on broadcasting of 1998 talks. We said that because we still need more research and investigation on that, how must this look like? What must be expected out of it? Taking into consideration that this spectrum is a scarce resource that belongs to government, but there are other role players that utilize it. But whilst you are saying we acknowledge that it belongs to everybody, there are security measures that must be put in place, which then require us to do more work, consult with those that are involved in terms of the security, and then be able to say, if Parliament agrees, this is therefore the way this spectrum management agency must be established, or there is no need. So we have given that to the ICT policy review that we are connecting that. Do some work, and then we're also going to do some research. The other one, Chairman, that we have decided to debate is the issue relating to the revision of the ownership and control provisions for the Broadcasting Services Act. I'm sure you all know some people will be issued or allocated spectrum for whatever services that they are going to do, let's say based on the fact that you are women. But then when Honorable Killian comes as a business person, I'm making an example, when she comes because she has money, maybe you are suffering, she's able currently to take over your company or buy it without you having to consult. So we said it is important that the people that give out the licenses approve of such exchanges. Thanks, Chair. Now, the critical thing again, we have decided that let us allow a minister, or let us request Parliament to allow the minister to issue a ministerial policy and policy directive. The ECA already allows us, but at times we experience challenges. For example, with USASA. Even if USASA fails, even if what is there is outdated, the minister cannot say, in terms of the universal service access role that you are supposed to play, we as national government, we have agreed on ABCD. Therefore, to align the NDP, whatever, make an example of the NDP, that is the national president, to align it towards your mandate, and so that we prioritize these directives this year, so that we all meet the requirements that are expected. So those are the things that we are requesting Parliament to assist us with. Because if we have a law that only gives guidance to what USASA must do, and the policy, we know which everyday policies change and all that, and we don't give that face to the minister, then also it means we are prolonging the processes, which might in turn lead to the delays that we have experienced in terms of reaching what we want to achieve. Chairperson, I would then request my team to go through the presentation, and then we'll welcome any questions that the members want to raise. Can you?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable members. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for the introductory remarks. Our presentation is going to be in four parts. We're going to be giving a background to the amendment, as the Deputy Minister has highlighted. We're going to be able to talk to the process that has been undertaken in the development and the revising and the introduction of the bill to Parliament, as well as the objectives of the EC amendment bill. And we summarize as well the key amendments in terms of each section and each chapter as we are amending it. As the Deputy Minister has already alluded, it's been 7 years now that the ECA has been in operation, but it's evident that many of the elements of the legislation does require amendment or modification. The ECA obviously repealed the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and it was heralded as a law that will foster conversion in the ICT sector, and it provided clarity or separation between policy and relation making and so on. However, as we are implementing this law, we have seen that there is some ambiguity in terms of some of the sections in the Act, and that those create interpretational challenges, and at the same time they expose the regulator to frequent litigation. We are seeing continued market failure in that, for example, we have continued high cost to communicate. Some parts of the issue have also been outdated as a result of high court judgments, especially the altered case of 2008, which has effectively liberalized the internal communication space. We have issues in the current Act that refer to geographic number portability, for example. Some of those parts, because they've been suppressed by technology, we've decided that we need to just remove them from the Act. Other amendments are required because we have not, all the time have not been adhered to or they have lapsed. In terms of the amendment bill, as Deputy Minister has alluded, we published the bill in July 2012. The period of consultation was extended by another 2 weeks. Originally it was gazetted for only 30 days because we received requests from stakeholders to grant the consultation period. We extended that by another 2 weeks. We'd like to say at this stage the respondents that took time to write to the department. We received more than 40 written submissions, in total more than 500 pages to consider. Internally, we had a very robust and reiterative process which to analyze each and every submission against the policy imperatives of government. We then revised, based on the submissions that we received, the amendment law. We did that through the infrastructure development cluster, which is a cluster that is chaired by the Department of Public Enterprises and Rural Development and Land Reform. We also consulted bilaterally with the Competition Commission as well as the Department of Finance. We revised the bill further based on the comments that we received from the government consultation process, and then tabled the bill in Cabinet in May 2012, in 2013, excuse me. It was approved by the Cabinet and it was therefore introduced in Parliament in July 2013. What do we seek to do with this Act? What is it that we want to achieve? We are deleting, we are amending, we are also repealing obsolete definitions. For example, the reference to geographic number portability, those are obsolete definitions and so on, we are revising those. We are also aligning the provisions on transformation in the book with that of the principal legislation on broad-based black economic empowerment. We have refined the licensing provisions, which will be in the next slide where we're going to explain how we've done that. There's been an outcry with regard to the consultative processes taking long in terms of the CASA, and so on. We've tried to deal with that as the issues have arisen in our engagement with the PPC itself, industry, as well as other government components. We're making also further provisions to ensure that there is effective competition in the sector. We are removing regulatory bottlenecks that have been hampering the effective regulation of the sector. We also, in the bill, requiring the Minister of Communications to establish a council to advise the Minister on broadband related issues in policy as well as implementation. And we are making further amendments in respect of the E-rate, and we'll speak to those issues in the presentation. Furthermore, we are making governance issues, we are taking up governance-related provisions in terms of USASA, and we are also refining issues related to the Universal Citizen Access Fund. In terms of the definitions, the issues related to spectrum, like allocation, assignment, and so on, we simply aligned those definitions with the ITU standards. We have defined broadband as an always available multimedia capable connection. As the Deputy Minister has said, we have not included the fees, the minimum fees, because we thought that must be gazetted from time to time. We have defined days to refer more to calendar days, not as working days. We have also defined the issues related to the common carrier and Centec and any other person that can provide a signal distribution on a non-discriminatory and non-exclusive basis. We have expanded the definition of electronic communications facility, which is something that has been we received numerous comments on from respondents, and we've agreed to expanding that definition of electronic communications facilities. And as we said earlier on, any issues related to radio frequency spectrum will simply align those with the ITU regulations and standards. In terms of Section 2 of the Act, we simply replace historically disadvantaged persons, including black people, and we replace that with broad-based economic empowerment, because that is the terminology that is fitting now with the principal Act, and we thought that it's proper and appropriate to simply have that alignment. Here, Chair, Honourable Chairman, we just have to apologize. We left out the slide on the amendment of Section 3 before this one, but it's the issues that the Deputy Minister has covered in her introductory remarks, where we are enabling the Minister of Communications to be able to issue policy direction to USASA in addition to ICASA. But then in terms of Section 4 of the Act, this is now Chapter 2 on licensing. Again, in line with the ITU regulations and the cabinet approved radio frequency spectrum policy for South Africa, we have substituted certain words in respect of radio frequency spectrum to be absolutely aligned and coherent with the ITU regulations and standards. We are also, in relation to the authority's obligations to inform the Minister of its intention to make regulations, we've just created the requirement for ICASA to finish the Minister with a copy of such regulations. At the moment, the Act requires that ICASA simply informs the Minister that this is the intention to do so, because to foster closer working relationship between the Minister of Communications and ICASA, it is now a requirement in this bill that such a copy be finished to the Minister. Licensing issues are at the heart of what ICASA does. It is the path of the work of ICASA, and this is an area that has been a subject to debate over a very long period of time. And given the submissions that we've received from ICASA, as well as our engagement with the independent authority, there are certain provisions, therefore, that we are now refining in this area of work. And we are also trying to close the loopholes that are currently evident in respect of the licensing provisions. More importantly, in this area, we are empowering ICASA to issue or to impose additional terms and conditions on ICASA's licensees only in respect to achieving universal service and universal access. We are also strengthening coherence between ICASA and USASA to make sure that the authority is not obliged in the law to consult with USASA on such matters. So it cannot be that the independent authority was outside of consulting with USASA, and now we've made it in law a requirement that they must consult with USASA on issues related to universal service and universal access. Further changes in terms of the licensing framework, we are aligning, as we said earlier on, the provisions on empowerment with the principal legislation on BEE Act to ensure that the objects of both acts are actually achieved. The terminology and language is aligned in that respect. And we are also saying that, as the Deputy Minister alluded earlier on, that prior written approval to permission must be obtained from ICASA if a licensee seeks to sublet, to cede, or transfer the control of an individual license. Because when the licenses are being issued, they are issued based on certain criteria and certain credentials. Therefore, it cannot be that it cannot be correct that that license is simply transferred by another entity to another licensee without ICASA being notified and ICASA actually approving of that. This also helps ICASA in that if a licensee, for example, is owing money to the entity, those monies can be part of the condition, for example, of transferring that license, could be that those monies must be paid up before such a license is transferred and so on. It provides greater oversight for ICASA in terms of that issue, which is currently now part of the problems that we are encountering and part of the loophole that we are now seeing. We furthermore, because there's also been on the one hand that ICASA is also not efficient in processing such applications and so on, we've made it now a requirement that within 30 days, if within 30 days there is no response from ICASA with regard to the application of ceding, subletting or transferring the control of the individual license, we shall be deemed that permission is being given if there is no response from ICASA in writing. So we are holding both ICASA accountable to managing those that process, but also giving it more powers to have greater control over that area of work. In terms of the other issues related to the licensing framework, we've just refined licensing provisions with regard to the registration of class licenses. The major work of government, national government priorities are in relation to the provision of ICT infrastructure, because we want to advance the knowledge economy, we want to build an information society and so on. There needs to be a way in which we enable, as government and the independent authority as the regulator, to enable the rapid deployment of communications facilities. And in here, we're looking more particularly within the context of rolling out broadband infrastructure. Therefore, part of the problems that we've had earlier on, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is that the current Act talks to the guidelines that we simply must have guidelines to enable the rapid deployment of infrastructure of electronic communication facilities. We have replaced the word guidelines with policy and policy directions because to remove the legal uncertainty regarding the word guideline. But we are also saying that as the Ministry of Communications and the Department, we have to find a mechanism through an IGR instrument which harmonizes or promote infrastructure, the provision of infrastructure, but it harmonizes, brings together issues related to municipal bylaw, the applicable provincial legislation, as well as national legislation to enable the rapid deployment of that infrastructure. Otherwise, we are sitting with a problem where permission is granted for a company A to dig roads and put in fiber. Just the following week, there's another company also digging up the same road, same street, same everything, and so on. We need to be safeguarding, one, the government infrastructure, which is a municipal infrastructure, but at the same time, ensuring that there is that rapid way in which that infrastructure can be deployed. So in this way, Chair, we believe that we need to fast-track the engagement with the relevant departments here, for example, COXA, for example, Department of Land and Rural Development and so on, in order to deal with some of these matters. In respect of radio frequency spectrum, as the Minister said also earlier on, we have aligned issues related to spectrum in line with ITU standards. And in here, we are also empowering ICASA to be able to provide written approval when a licensee, for example, seeks to transfer, sublet or assign or cede in any way whatsoever, the transfer of control of a radio frequency spectrum license. It cannot be that is done in a corner somewhere. The independent authority must be made aware of that, and it must be able to provide that information if it agrees with that. In terms of the technical equipment standards, here is closing the loophole again here. We are ensuring that that persons possessing equipment and facilities must also obtain any type of approval from ICASA. At the same time, we are simply updating the Standard Act of 1993 because the current one now is the Standard Act. Of 2008, we are simply updating that legislation there. Chapter 7 on interconnection is a very critical component of the work that ICASA does. And in here, Honorable Members and Honorable Chair, we have made it more, we replace financial reasonableness in terms of a person requesting to interconnect with essential facilities of another operator and so on. We have made it more, to have a wider application. We replace financial reasonableness with economic feasibility, because we believe that issues around benefit versus cost, vis-a-vis cost and so on, must be applied, not just to look at the financial aspect of whether it's feasible to interconnect with those essential facilities or not. So we've made it more wider in terms of the capacity in which ICASA can see whether the parties must be able to reach an agreement or not, and also to be able to adjudicate should there be not an agreement reached in that regard. We've also in this area ensure that ICASA can impose additional terms and conditions consistent with the chapter within 5 days upon receiving notification that there is a failure to reach an agreement between two parties. On the Broadcasting Services chapter, which is amendments of Section 48 to 66, these are quick ones. We are empowering ICASA to be able to regulate the scheduling of advertisements of infomercials and program sponsorships, working closely with the Advertising Standards Authority of South Africa. We are also obliging the common carrier to now submit its case for approval by ICASA, which is currently not the case. We are putting that in law, even if it was in practice. And this enables ICASA to provide a regulatory oversight over the common carrier, and which I think we believe that it is an empowering aspect in terms of this legislation. Some of the discussions we've had in the PCC itself and very robust engagements are in areas of competition. How do we allow and facilitate effective competition in the sector and so on? Part of the problems in the current Act is that there isn't an explicit delineation of the areas of competition that ICASA is responsible for vis-a-vis that of competition authorities, including the Competition Commission. Now, these amendments are enabling that clear demarcation between the areas which ICASA has got explicit preserve on and the areas which the Competition Commission is the domain of the Competition Commission, in line with the Competition Act as it currently is. And this is an area where we had various engagements with the Competition Commission to make sure that we are refining and we are making sure that those provisions from a competition perspective is coherent and is aligned. One of the issues that we're empowering ICASA here on is very critical, is that we're empowering ICASA in respect of the competition matters to include, amongst other things, as part of the regulatory arsenal that it can have to impose structural separation or as a remedy to deal with issues of competition or barrier to competition. On the general issues in the Act that we are amending, we are dealing with issues of the four-digit number 2010. This call center that handles government information, queries directly and so on, we've got problems in terms of the costs that must be borne out of the provision of that service, and we believe that those costs cannot be borne by government, and that they must be passed on to the licensees, because that's what the initial intention of the law has been, and we are simply refining those to make sure that indeed that is the case. We believe that issues related to broadband are critical to the achievement of the National Development Plan vision of 2030, is critical to building an information society and building a knowledge economy. And therefore, we are in this law empowering the minister to establish a national broadband council to advise the minister on broadband policy and implementation, and that this will become a broader engagement platform for stakeholders in relation to broadband. We are also extending the e-rate provision, because currently in the Act they only talk to public schools. So we are saying that if we are to meet the National Development Plan in terms of its vision of 2030 of creating a knowledge economy and information society, we are extending this e-rate provision to all schools and as well as to all institutions of higher education. That's important, and this is an area which also will assist ICASA in the department in providing oversight and monitoring if that is in the case, because at the moment it will be like the licenses will be saying we are still waiting to see which schools have been defunded, public schools which we need to connect and so on. So we are making that e-rate provision to be across schools to apply to all schools as well as to all institutions of higher learning, both public and private. An area which is very would be is very important and which has been raised several times in the public discourse is in relation to the governance provisions of USASA. We are in this amendment act in order for us to increase transparency as well as accountability. We have set the framework for the removal of board members and so on. We have indicated the conditions for termination of the employment of the CEO, the conditions under which the acting CEO can be appointed and so on. And that, more importantly, the bringing the provisions in terms of USASA in line with the PFMA requirements, which is something that is important to make sure that whatever else has been done within USASA space is in line with the provisions of the PFMA, Public Funds Management Act. At the same time, we are also saying that part of the mandate of USASA must be that it must be able to collect the money on USASA from USASA and so on. And that we've made a provision in that regard in this amendment. The last point would be the latter part of the transitional provisions. Those provisions now, some of them that have now passed, we have repealed those. The reference to informant time frames have now passed, we've deleted those, and the short title in the Act is not provided for. And in addition, we've also provided for the different days for the coming preparation of the different sections of this Act, and those will also be provided for by notice in the Gazette. As the last aspect of this arrangement. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Let me thank again the Honourable Members for giving this opportunity. I don't know if you would like to invite questions now, or we must proceed with the bills and then questions will take later. We'll await your guidance.
Thank you very much, DM and your team, on the presentation. Members, are you ready to take questions or clarities, or we proceed? Tambi, I can see your hand up on our own time.
Thank you. I'm looking at Honorable Bushley. I think he's going to see me on this one. I'm sitting on my agenda. Can we could have 5 minutes for us?
Honorable Kila? Can you talk your own issues?
Can I keep on?
Can I keep on?
Can I keep on? After the
Or you wanted to get to the issues yourself? You can just hold, you can just hold if that is the case, so that we allow the ANC, the caucus time then, will proceed. We will then adjourn until it will be a good time for, if she is here, probably must take it. And Mtambi, Shin, who else? That would be the three. Kile?
First of all, I just need clarity on the background to the amendment. First of all, the whole issue of the ICG policy review. Are we not jumping the gun in this ETA? There's a policy review gazette that was published in 2013, there's a group of experts that have been appointed, etc. Now, I know that some of the issues that are addressed in the amendment are very important issues, and it is about time that we have addressed. However, now I find myself in a little bit of a confusing state. How do we manage this? If there is a policy review commission or committee, that has been appointed. What is the role now of the committee of APC, portfolio committee, to review the ECA before they have actually completed their work in terms of their mandate, in terms of committee? So that's my first question. Secondly, Chair, I want to know, in the past, I don't know, but there were different departments that were responsible for different components of ICT technology, etc. Is the communications department now undisputedly the lead department? And is it going to provide the basic framework for rollout even to schools and other educational institutions? I know that some of it, there might maybe be minimum standards that would be determined somewhere else, but clearly some of the references made here to COCTA, etc., and the fact that we should write it into the law, you need a lead department. You cannot have too many people involved in this. So is the intention to say that this is the lead department and other departments, whoever wants to fulfill a role, would have a subsidiary role to fulfill? So I want to have clarity about that. Then thirdly, I know that before an amendment bill is introduced, legal advisors are looking at it and they determine if they find any unconstitutional components. But we have also had it wrong before, and those very same legal or state law advisors have had it wrong in the past. To the extent that the Constitution Court has ruled bills passed by Parliament and enacted to be unconstitutional. So now I'm questioning, again it comes back to the ICT policy review, but I'm questioning reference to the role of ICASA, not all of it, but some elements. Has it been found to really be constitutional? Because I'm still concerned, the question that we find ourselves with a regulator that is ineffective, but it is a constitutional structure. So whatever we do, we cannot change the nature of the structure to interfere in a Chapter 9 institution. We must correct the operations differently, or we must appoint different people, or whatever. But I'm concerned about that, and I want to know what the department's view is, what the minister's view is about that. Then just, Chair, if you will allow me, reference to USALSA. Chairperson, at some stage the committee deliberated on also USALSA as an institution and whether they are fulfilling their mandate. And we have in fact said, if it's a structure that is effective, don't we need something different? Now we're actually writing them in further into the Act. We're writing in certain requirements, and the authority is now obliged to consult with USALSA. Amendments, sections 5 to 19 on page 12. My concern is, if the regulator is required to consult, clearly it should consult with all role players in the sector. It isn't necessary to specifically mention an agency that we feel is not necessarily the answer to make sure that people in remote areas are receiving, because they have failed, let's be honest. They have failed dismally with fulfilling the action. And I must say, just when I think they're going ahead, then it's one step ahead and two steps back. So maybe I'm unfair, but that is personally my view about USALSA and the individuals who are involved in USALSA. Then lastly, Chairperson, maybe I'm answering myself, the fact that it is good that we write in certain things about the role of ICASA, but I must say we are extending their operations, and as they are at present, they seem not to have the capacity to do what they have been compelled to do by law, and now we're giving them further responsibility. So I'm just asking, and that brings me back to the original question, are we doing the right thing? Or should we perhaps hold back? Is there anything very urgent in the Act that would require the passing of an amendment act right now before the ICT policy review process has been concluded? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are basically about the process, and I think that the two bills, the ICASA and ECA, have been extensively revised, which I think is from their original publication, which I think is a step in the right direction. But I'm obviously concerned about the process at this stage. I would like to know whether there's been consultation with the House Chairperson about the parliamentary program for the rest of this Parliament, as to whether it's realistic for us to actually be even reprocessing four bills at this time, and we should perhaps have clarity on which have critical deadlines that have to be met, and that perhaps we should focus on that. Also, as the public participation process for the ECA and the ICASA bill is still underway, and the others that have not even started yet, whether we should be waiting perhaps for some impact or inputs from those people before we actually proceed into too much detail on these bills at this stage. There obviously will be some interesting impact on that. Because, you know, there are issues of detail that I have concern about, from the bill that's before us, or the bills that are before us. But I don't know whether this is the appropriate time, because, you know, we have the policy review coming up, we still have the public participation process on all four bills, and really, what is realistically expected by Parliament, acceptable, or likely to be processed by Parliament, or has to be processed by Parliament, before Parliament rises in April or whenever next year. So can we have some clarity on what is happening in the House regarding the processing of all these outstanding legislation that is from this committee?
Thank you very much, Ntami.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think when we ask for a discuss there were about the issues that are raised by my two colleagues. And to say being undertaken by the minister. On the other hand, they have discussed the shape of the region. Now there is this legislative program that we're in. Our understanding of the ANC is that the policy review process involves the legislative program. So we just want to get this in the DOC as required. The committee on the legislature to that yet. Also, we think that the NGO has been in the image of the legislature. And these other people, did you take that into account?
Thank you. The MNOT.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me explain the fact that the ICT policy review came off of this campaign and in March 2014, which means whatever recommendation that they will bring will only be that time, March 2014. And then legislation probably 2015. Then, Shepherdson, taking into consideration that there are things that need intervention. For example, the issue of USASA that we're talking about. It is critical to everybody that USASA, whilst we are not taking a decision whether to do away with it or what, but there must be measures that are put in place to ensure that we rectify what is going wrong. Because as much as we have set up structures, at times we have not given a clear mandate and support to think this is what is expected of you. Therefore, if you don't deliver on A, B, C, D, this is what happens. Have you had a talking to the issue of even removing the board members. Because at times you start with board members because their term of office is 3 years, even if they're not adding any value, and there's nothing you can do. I'm making an example with regards to that one. Secondly, Shepherdson, whilst we're undergoing this process, we ensure that the broader issues of high impact, as I highlighted earlier on, are referred to the ICT policy review, because we understood what is going to cause confusion and we might come up with something that contradicts what the policy review will come up with. So we said, okay, let us, through the public consultation or the consultation that we've had, let us at least work on what we have common understanding of. Not saying we're doing away with what the ICT policy is going to do, but because we realize that we have challenges right now, and we believe that as the department we have a critical role to ensure that we don't wait until everything is destroyed or everything is messed up. Therefore, we said we can't wait for 2015. If I'm correct, Shepherdson, the minister has the right to withdraw a legislation. Our belief is, if there's anything that has gone wrong in the legislation that is going to be approved or not approved by Parliament, when the ICT policy review legislation comes in 2015, this legislation can be withdrawn if they don't talk to what the country needs. We also, in a process of developing or passing the broadband policy, which we understand very clearly that it has to be aligned in the legislation, but it doesn't mean that we can't start work now to ensure that there will be broadband rollout. We can't wait for 2015. That has been our nature. But we agree that as much as you have in concern, we have those questions of us. What is this for? Where is this taking us? What is that we're going to achieve? But as I indicated earlier, we said let's put something in place in the meantime that 2015 is not there. Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure if I've covered everything. If there's something that I've left out, the team will respond to those questions.
Thank you, DM. Any adding from the team? As noted to Honorable Mokto. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, I think there is an issue of ICASA as a constitutional institution. Indeed, we have not tampered with any provision that affects that. In the explanatory memorandum, actually, it's an issue which we also think that needs to be referred to the ICT policy review in terms of the issues generally raised. So the proposals at this point in time do not affect that issue, specifically Honorable Shepherdson. I think the other issues are that we to
Minister. Thank you. Thank you. And that you hear, Honorable Maruto.
Shepherdson, I don't know whether this gadget does work because it's disconnected somehow. Can you hear?
Okay.
You know, Shepherdson, I think we are sharing the same for the first time with the other parties. The same concern.
And
I'm quite aware that the parliamentary processes are working. This has been on the program already. And how to reverse it is going to be some other, you know, process. But from the explanation I get from the DM, to me, it seems we are, you know, we are going to be running around in circles. Because yes, it is quite true that there must be some work being done. But what does it mean when it means next year we have to review that again? And by the way, convening of meetings is a lot of money. And sometimes during this year we won't all be here. It means if we continue with this, we have to come up here. And that is going to be extra work, extra money. I don't know, Chairperson, if we can have an intervention. What Honorable C was talking about in terms of the processes of Parliament, so that we can see whether this could be considered, our concerns could be considered. Because I really think that we cannot change the fact that the policies inform the legislature. And it means we are going to be shuttling front to back, just like that. It will be useful for us really to consider the emergent issues. But if you talk about the concerns that are raised by the members of the opposition about the ICASA, aren't we going to go further and intrude further, you know, on some of the areas that we're not supposed even to go to, because it's a Section 9 institution. And about the USASA team, the issue that was raised by Honorable Killian, it also goes a long way. You have to go into details. We are talking here about legislation, we are not talking about the structure. And the legislation is the one that is going to inform whom you put in place and what kind of a caliber do you need and everything. But for now, we are talking about the USASA, the structure, that the legislation that will inform that. Whether those people in USASA are not the correct people, it's not time for them now. So I think I will concur with my colleague here in terms of inquiring whether we can really have another way of dealing with this. I do respect the fact that already so many strides have been made, but I had a serious concern about the issue also. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. If I understood the DM properly, I thought she was saying that we're going to have a political review, 2014 and legislation implemented based on the 2015, and that in the time being, we really can't just sit back and wait for that period. What we need to do is, whatever, I think the emphasis must be, whatever we're going to do now, hopefully because it is in the same country for the same needs, that will coincide with policy review. I really, I don't think if we are waiting properly,
that we can take a decision and say, for example, universal coverage, broadband, only to find out that policy review says no, that actually be the case. Our debate is that by and large, by the time the complete policy review, it should be in line with a lot of other things that we're doing. Otherwise, I don't know how we can be identifying the need of our people or communication to our society if it won't be in line. I think the only problem that I'm really facing, we can't sit back. We need to work and do things and hope that a lot of things that we'll do be in line with policy review. Thanks. This is how I heard the DM as presentation.
I've seen Honorable Ken, your hand is up, but okay. I'm sure you want to add on what you have asked already. And Tandy, your hand is also up again, but it will help if they can respond, because maybe it can solve some of the follow-up questions that ourselves keep on talking amongst ourselves. DFO, Barbara Klein.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I just want to say that, first of all, if we do need to go into just further detail on the bill, clarifications, any questions, it would be interesting, because I would like to ask a question about CETA as well, but doesn't matter. Secondly, it is a pity that Honorable Schneeman is not here today, because in terms of processing of the bill through Parliament, this is actually interesting. Since we now have four before us, what will be required is that it is in fact classified as a priority for it to be passed, because there's quite a long list of bills to be passed by Parliament before Parliament rises. So that goes through the Leader of Government, Business, etc., and obviously not all of the bills of communication could receive that priority status, so DM could have a look at that. Second possibility, Chair, is that we actually ask the DM and the department to say, if we as a committee look at the details of the bill, and if the DM is passionate about regulating USASA, indicate to us which are the specific provisions which would currently make it possible to exercise better oversight until the policy review process has been concluded and the entire package of legislation has changed. That would be a second proposal. Third one, and maybe this sounds a little arrogant, but Chairperson, I want to just say to the DM, in terms of Parliament and our role, it's not the executive who will change, but we can do it as Parliament, because the Constitution makes us the legislative body. So what we can do in terms of Section 44 is we can pass Section 55, we can consider, pass, amend or reject any legislation before the Assembly, and we can initiate or prepare legislation except one body. So we are the legislative arm. So even if we consider and we have received the bill before us, we can decide that yes, certain provisions are critical ones for us to pass at this stage, but the rest of the bill we won't put through right at this stage. And obviously it would help if there is sort of an indication from the side of the ministry and as well as from the department which are the most critical ones that we should in fact pass through now, so that there's not legislative uncertainty, but we also don't do things all over again. Thank you, Chair. The last thing, Chair, is it would be interesting to have perhaps input from the policy review panel about the Act before us, so that that could also help us with the way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Mtam.
Yes. The issue is that I know we don't want to just show many amendments to this, because it also puts a risk for that. Those things can actually be so undesirable, and it creates a lot of uncertainty. Hence the same. I wonder why they don't allow it to show up for me. And I was looking at the same. Maybe you need to take us to our complaints about the state. My emphasis then she got to begin to that effect. Where possible, that's the responsible citizen who needs to grasp the policy and question. Cannot read from any amendment.
Thank you. I don't want to comment. Probably let me give it to the DM. I'm not sure that there is a member sitting here who can look me in the eye and say it is fair for children in school to have access to internet for 2 years waiting for the policy review. I don't think so. Because we see the issue here is that there is a concern about the possibility in terms of the challenge we are having. And the DM is saying we are doing amendments which are technical, which are in terms of not overhauling the current situation and so on. Now, I think the question about processes of parliament, I'm sure it's something we must handle ourselves as a court, got nothing to do with the department. Because they are not part of that. It's just us who are throwing them to that. We are asking them questions which are linked to process of parliament. We have got nothing to do with process of parliament. It's us who must do that and so on. How to handle that visibility, where it's possible and so on. That's what we are going to do, ourselves as members. Probably the question for DM, the other question which the case, the issue of the policy review vis-a-vis the amendment, the intent and the other thing which members are saying. But I'm saying if we're part of the public hearing we're coming from, surely there are certain things that need to be done. We can't wait for 2 years to amend the legislation closely, unless we are not first to South Africa. But if we're part of the public hearing, listening to what people were submitting when we were in Soweto, East London and Devon, real South Africans are having it tough in some of these issues which are right here. And I don't think that they can wait for 2 years. For that matter. So, but you can respond to them. But I think members are asking questions and respond themselves because some they end up saying, what are these key areas which we have to deal with, which are going to unleash? We can't have a regulator meeting, can't deal with the sector for the next 2 years. It's quite impossible. So we need certain things to happen, but if we'll be following the public hearing we're coming from, and we are really representing the South Africans, so that we improve their lives, become something else and so on. But the issue of the process of parliament, the time and so on, we'll deal with that. It's our own issue internal as parliament. I don't think you have to respond on that, except for the issue which is to the department. Yeah?
Thank you. Just on a lighter note, I can imagine when members of political parties decide to say because elections are in 2014, therefore in 2010 we can't be doing anything because there's this process, and then we'll start working on our manifesto in 2013. And but Chairperson, as I explained earlier on, we had paid much attention and focus to what the honourable members are raising. Hence, if you listened to my briefing, I said, if you, Parliament, approve, because I'm very clear of the role of the legislative arm. But secondly, as the chairperson has highlighted, if you listen to the presentation or you went through it, there are things that you have raised yourselves when we came to present with respect to the organization or the entities that we're talking about. That hampers the progress of the work that they're supposed to deliver on. Those are the things that we said, let us focus on. I hear mention of us intruding on ICASA's Chapter 9 status or whatever. I don't know when or where do we suggest that in the amendments that were made. Maybe the members highlight it and tell us what is it that we have done that is against the law. Because there is that we are not all experts in the law, as we were saying, good at times. We find ourselves in the Constitutional Court. But what is important is that at least those that have expertise in the area advise their limitations and become their limitations. We have ensured that whatever we are proposing, we consult, we check with other role players, both in government and in the private sector. Honourable Kilian raised an important question
in the first round of questions that we did not respond to. Is the Department of Communications now the overall leader of the ICTs? If you read the NDP, it tells us that. That it is our responsibility. That is why even in the 15 and other critical areas that talk to the rollout of ICTs, Department of Communication is the leader and then work together with those that are also role players. We know, for example, we have BDI and the public enterprise. We are saying it is our responsibility to ensure that these are all structures of government. The fact that every time we experience a challenge, we run to creating another entity is a serious challenge. Hence, that this time, let us sit down and see what is it that we have not done right, and therefore seek to correct that so that we make the best of what we have. Instead of putting this today, tomorrow we do away with it in terms of this process. Because as you said, members, it doesn't just take time and money, but it deprives those that are supposed to be beneficiaries of the services that must run. When the President made his State of the Nation address, when he spoke about ICTs, he gave us a clear mandate that broadband has to be rolled out. Hence the NDP will tell you of the 2020 target that we have at every board. But then if we don't take measures identifying from the gaps that are existing today, we wait for 2015. When are we going to reach out on those targets? Whether it's 2020 or 2013, or 2013. Why can't we agree that when we have this panel that has been established by the same department with clear terms of reference and then time frames set aside, they do the work, as I said, whatever we do, what we say is that let us consult each other. Let us bounce with the panel, because they also do the consultation. We're consulting the same people. We also care about one thing. We don't want to confuse the stakeholders. That we go from this side because we want to talk about the amendments, the policy review, go with that side to the same people. We say, let us find a way of ensuring that what we do talks to each other. Then those that are beyond what we can do currently, I hand it over to the ICT policy review. On the issues of, again, on the alignment with what they are doing, if you check our priorities and everything, your broadband, your competition, the rate provision, your software governance, the ICASA funding, licensing in terms of terms and conditions, the BE provisions is what every citizen is complaining about together with government. But these are the things that when you look into these amendments, that must be attended to and addressed urgently. I don't know, I want to appeal to members, understanding very well that it is within their right to accept or reject our proposals to this bill, or all the bills that are spoken of. But I want to appeal to all members to consider the issue that you spoke about. We made commitments, we communicated with the country, we are going to connect so many schools, we are going to build so many centers, even to the private sector. We are going to develop a broadband policy that has its own implications in terms of spectrum allocation and rollout of other services. That we did with the understanding that this body understands, because we first communicated and presented here, even in our budget road speeches, and even when the PICC and the NDP were presented, we said we support those things that they must be delivered. We appeal to you members that you consider those that are critical, as we are saying. We agree we can't do everything in one time. We all have elections, we have other things to attend to. But there are things that we feel we can't wait, the ones that are highlighted above. Lastly, Chairperson, For example, we're talking about the post bank and the post office bills that we also say they're critical. Very interesting, Chair, that if you recall the initial call or the background why we had to establish the post bank, that some raised a lot of questions. Do we want to build another Absa bank? Or we want to build a bank that will be for poor and therefore systems and everything that government will have to talk about? That's the question that is out there. At the same time, citizens, we have a responsibility to ensure that the post bank is licensed. And for us to get the post bank license, unfortunately, we have to comply with what the Reserve Bank wants. All those laws are made here that give the power to the Reserve Bank, that we agree that we must establish a post bank with different interests. But, Chairperson, when you are going to present the post bank, we want you to take into consideration these issues that I have, or questions that I have raised, that have been raised by a lot of people. Lastly, Chairperson, even with the post bank and the SABO bill, the policy review process is in process again, unfortunately. So if we are saying, no, this one we can't go ahead, we can't go ahead with, because there's a process that is being undertaken. I'm not sure what it is that we're looking at, except the priority thing that needs to be taken care of. But either way, they have a bearing on the ICT policy review. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, DM. Honorable saying, we need to finish this discussion. We can't carry on for long. Honorable saying, Honorable Marutuwa, noted.
Thank you, Chief. So that was exactly my suggestion. I don't believe we can come to a decision this morning about whether we're going to process the bill or not. I'd like to suggest that we actually get the briefing on the other three bills. There's information that we require to make an informed decision that's not available to the committee at the moment. And we do the briefing on all four. We have another meeting with answers to some of the questions that have been asked in terms of the parliamentary program, what is realistically possible. I mean, we've got a wish list, but it may not be possible at all. We seem to forget we've still got the SABC interviews and board to a point as well. When we've got all that information at our disposal, we then have a meeting and we entertain and we debate and determine what is going to be urgent, what is possible, what is realistic, etc. But let us go through the briefing so that at least we get all the briefings of all four bills today. And the other processes we take forward at another meeting.
Honourable Rota.
Jensen, I think Honourable State has covered me, because I can see you, Chairperson, and the DM, this issue of the schools and everything. We are agreeing with you, Chairperson. That's what I came to say. We have the same concept. We are not calling for a rejection of what has been put in front of us. What we need is just the processes to be friendly to us. Yes. We don't want processes that will prove us not to be thinkers. Even people who are looking at us as Parliament and the Department, they find that we are entangled in a mess of things. But what has been put in front of us, we know that the concerns that have been raised, and it, to us, it's not even driven by the fact that we went for oversight. So it has been there. These are the concerns that we had for some time now. So I think I will agree with that. What is the other name that you call
Bush?
I don't want to be beaten by people because I don't know what that is. Oh, Bush.
Uh, No. That is rubbish. Thank you. I'm sure the issue of parliament policies will end because, like Honorable Killen raised that and so on. And also the issue of prioritizing what is important, what is key, we'll have to do that as we move forward. If members have got any clarity or question on what is presented, they can ask that. If not, probably can proceed to the next presentation. Honorable Killen, you said that something? Oh, my apologies, Honorable Ketane. I was supposed to come to you, Honorable Ketane.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to very briefly comment on the question Jimmy is asking about the postbank. Personally, I feel it has been discussed for a very long time. By now, we should. Obviously, we want something pro-poor, but also sustainable at the same time. And I think all over the world, there are too many examples of this type of event that we shouldn't really start, and we shouldn't reinvent the wheel, because there are best practices all over the world. I mean, I would just like to see that type of event in a village where I can send money to my uncle anytime, and it will link up the urban area and rural area in terms of economic activity. And I think that is possible. And I think we theorized enough. Now it is time to put it on the ground. The rest will follow as we shape it, according to material conditions that will shape it. Otherwise, you theorize forever and never put anything to test.
Thanks very much. As you know, that theory without practice is there. That's what Marx and Lenin will say. Honorable Killen. You were wanting to ask questions in relation to the presentation, not the process.
Chairperson, I think if, with your permission, we can proceed to the rest of the bill. I won't go into any further detail at this stage. Thank you.
Okay. We can get to the next.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. Only it has a real case. I guess it's something that we've already spoken about, the challenges that we face with Yukasa, Yukasa, sorry, not Yukasa. What everybody is looking at me now, I'm thinking Yukasa. The challenges that we face, you know, a lot of them you have raised, the lack of visibility of policy goals in regulation, the role played by the Compliance and Compliance Committee that needs to be strengthened, the stakeholder engagement, that needs to be strengthened again. We therefore, Chairperson, agree that it is important that we introduce this amendment, simply because we believe that the need to concern, to conform, sorry, the ICASA Act and the authority to the requirements of the PFMA of 19, of course. Also, we need ICASA to regulate the sector in the public interest aligned to broader policy objectives in government. You know, out there, there's also an outcry about the regulator being captured and everything else. But we are saying the main reason why we established the regulator was to ensure that the public interest is taken into consideration. We wanted to work in improving the governance in terms of the policy coordination between the authority and the Department of Communications, that is the shareholder. Clarification on certain aspects of the authority, who is supposed to do what. They are independent, but the policy maker remains the Department of Communications. Therefore, whatever regulation that is passed has to talk to those. Lastly, Chair, everything that I think the members agree with us on, greater accountability and transparency, something that we are saying is important that we introduce this bill to address those things. For example, Chairperson, you will recall that many a time the CAS has come in front of you with concerns, especially over the role of the council members and the CEO's role. Things that has raised eyebrows and at times has managed to hammer the work that is supposed to be done in terms of clear accountability line. So we said, Chairperson, we have to bring this bill to ensure that all the above is addressed, what I've spoken to.
But one other thing that is critical, Chair, is to ensure that we bring all school self-services regulator into the ICASA amendment, which are currently in the School Services Act. Because if ICASA is the regulator, it must be able to regulate everybody in the sector. We must not have other entities or functions being performed somewhere else. If we are to lead ICT as the department in this country, therefore our regulator has a critical role to ensure that there's harmonization of the work that they do, so that when they have to monitor those that are supposed to be monitored, they don't say, we can't account for this because it is not within our mandate. I will then, Chairperson, having said that, let the team again take the members through everything that is in the amendment bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. I use the background that the two minister have provided. In terms of the ICASA amendment bill, the following process is what we then undertook. We gazetted the amendment bill in December 2012. Given the period of consultation ran over in terms of the holidays and so on, we had to also extend the period of our consultation on the bill. We have received, in terms of the ICASA amendment bill, around 30 submissions, which we have considered carefully. We undertook a government consultation process the same way we did in terms of the Electronic Communication Amendment Bill. We consulted with the Infrastructure Development Cluster, once more with the Competition Commission in respect of the harmonization there between the work of ICASA and that of the Competition Commission, as well as the Department of Finance, from the perspective of bringing in the ICASA Act more in line with the provisions of the PSMA. This bill in its revised form was approved by Cabinet in May 2013 and it has been now introduced to Parliament. In terms of the object of the bill, again, in line with the EC as well, we are amending, inserting new and repealing obsolete definitions. We are also providing further clarity now in respect of the powers and duties of the authority. We are bringing more accountability in respect of the committees and the authority, as well as the councillors themselves, containing that the use of electronic communications networks and services for the purpose of electronic transactions. What is important to note on the definition side is the need for ICASA to conclude concurrent jurisdiction agreements with other regulators that are playing in the same space as ICASA, for example, the National Consumer Commission, Competition Commission, and so on. I think that's one of the important things we just need to note in terms of the definition there. If we go to Section 3, we've inserted a new subsection there just to reiterate or to make it clear now in the law that any person who's aggrieved by the action or decision or finding of ICASA must seek redress in a court of law. And this will include as well the decisions that are taken in consequence of recommendations by the Compliance and Complaints Committee. In Section 4 of the CASA Amendment Bill, in the main here, we are saying that the ICASA may make recommendations to the Minister in terms of the Deposit Transactions Act, which is currently not in the domain of ICASA, but we are saying that if there is any relevant issues that they may want to bring to the attention of the minister, they may make recommendations in that regard. So that is what the provisions they are seeking to do. But we are also directing ICASA to conclude concurrent jurisdiction agreements with other institutions and review those every 3 years to bring them up to speed with technological advancements to the issues that will be material at that point in time, but there has to be some kind of a collaboration, close working relationship between ICASA and the other entities. As the minister has said, because ICASA is a multifunctional regulatory authority, we are also bringing in aspects of the postal regulation, which are sitting in the Postal Services Act. We are bringing it into the ICASA amendment bill as well, to just make sure that there is harmony in terms of that. What is more important than if they align now with the EPA amendment bill is that no one councillor or committee can have the power to make a decision about licensee. It cannot be that it's a councillor or some committee of CASA that decides on whether to revoke, to amend, or to issue a license, but that decision must be at the level of council so that that decision is taken collectively by the CASA council. But it cannot be that it's a decision that can be made by only one person or a committee in CASA. We have also in line with the need to deal with the lengthy consultative processes and so on, which may impact on the quality of the outcomes of those consultation processes. We have said that the time period for conducting inquiries must be shortened so that these processes must render results more quickly. But then in situations where there is substantial research that must be done, obviously then IHASA can indicate in those areas, and therefore the time period can be expanded or lengthened in that case. But it must be that they must be confined to specific consultation periods to make sure that we move with speed and agility in that regard. In terms of the appointment of councillors to the council, there we simply included, and this is something that came from the respondents, that we may just want to include areas of expertise, include also information technology as well as patent, and more importantly issues around consumer protection, because they can become a by the way in relation to the skill set of the councillor. So we brought those into the legislation as well to form part of the requirements, or at least the skill set and experience that the members of councillors can bring into the council. In terms of the performance management system, we are saying that in there we are reinforcing the collective decision making of the council, which the independent authority takes say, but we're also allowing that because so far it has been difficult to have the method of communication, actually sign performance agreement with individual councillors on different sets of targets or targets or outputs. At the moment, what they look like, they're all the same. All the councillors sign the same performance agreement in terms of the content with the minister. So we're just bringing that variation to say that it must be allowed that the performance agreements must be varied in accordance with the work allocation to each councillor. In that way, you can be able to measure the performance of the council collectively as well as individual councillors in that regard. We also have provided better clarity insofar as the place of office of the council is concerned. For example, it's very clear now that the chairperson can be appointed for one additional term of office of 5 years, and that the chairperson can only be in that office after the expiry of that term for up to 45 days only and no more, and that in terms of other councillors, they can be reappointed to their office of term of office, but for one additional term of 4 years. So we just refined it to be absolutely clear. In practice, that has been the case, but now it needs to be reflected as well in terms of legislation. And we're indicating also in the amendment law that the councillors are required to serve full time unless they are receiving academic pursuits or they occupy office as members of public interest bodies, like, for example, CRASA and so on. But what is more important is that CRASA is a Chapter 9 institution, therefore it must have the same kind of, be held in the same kind of, subjected to the same kind of ethos that permeate within other Chapter 9 institutions. For example, there has to be a code of ethics that they sign. There has to be a register of gifts and so on, so that members, honorable members, can also be privy to what sort of gifts and other things are the councillors being receiving and so on, and they must be declared in that regard. So we are introducing those as part and parcel of building up governance and accountability as well as transparency in ICASA. We're also making sure that and this is something that happens in other comparator communication authorities, that council meetings must be held, those minutes must be published in their library or the website of ICARA unless the information is deemed to be confidential, then that information can be held there. But that the Council of Wales meetings, those meetings are being made public, is part of that transparency that must be seen out there. And in fact, I'm making now a requirement because we've been having that disconnect, honourable members, between the CEO of ICARA being the accounting officer and the council being the you know, like the accounting authority or so on. We must be able to bring the two, the council as well as the role of the CEO to be in line. And in that case, you're saying that the CEO, we are reaffirming that the CEO is the accounting officer and all the applicable aspects of being an accounting officer must be done by the CEO. And that the CEO, although he's not a voting member of the ICARA Council, he must be invited to those meetings. Otherwise, the disconnect will continue until forever. But then we need to also dealing that with that in the bill as well. We've talked about the minutes to be circulated to all councillors. They must be published and so on. This is a benchmark in many other regulatory bodies similar to ICASA, and that issues of awarding a license is a matter for council. It cannot be left to a single councillor to deal with this exception of regulatory capture, Chairperson and Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. We've spoken also about the Code of Ethics, the register to declare this, and that both the Code of this register must form part of reporting to the National Assembly and must be open to inspection by the public. We have also looked at the fines that are payable, you know, by a member, a councillor, if they fail to disclose an interest and so on. Given that the value of money has increased since the original Act was passed, we've increased those from 50,000 rand to 1 million rand to deter any or disincentivize any councillor if they will be wanting to engage outside of the ambit of the law. We simply increase those penalties to make sure that they are stiff enough and they are in line with the value of money in today's terms. In terms of the staff and appointment of experts, and it's something that has been raised extensively in the responses that we received from stakeholders, we have tightened the provisions in terms of saying that the CEO is the council is responsible for the general operations of the entity. The staff and so on must be directed by the CEO of ICASA in terms of the work of ICASA, and that ICASA can no longer, at the current moment, they must get permission from the Minister of Communication if they want to appoint an expert from outside South Africa. So we are dealing away with that today, that in fact they can appoint the experts they require, even if they are outside the country, to help them with the work of the authority. But that the day-to-day operations of the authority must be directed by the CEO in line with the provisions of the PFA. For this in terms of confidentiality issue, we've just strengthened the clause that confirms that information presented to ICASA must be kept confidential unless it has been closed in terms of Section 12, just to tighten up the loophole there. And that we've spoken already in terms of the performance management system. We just need to be institutionalizing that system to make sure that it does to advance the objectives in line with government practice and so on. In terms of the annual report, this is an area where we requested assistance from the Department of Finance on the requirements of the FMA. And the role, to reaffirm again, the role of the CEO of ICASA is the accounting officer and therefore must be responsible for, among other things, producing financial statements and presenting them to to Parliament. And that in line with other requirements of other chapter 9 institutions, the CEO must also finish the deputy, I mean the Minister of Communications with those documents as well, but they must report, or he or she must report to Parliament in that regard. On the standing special committee, the simple amendment that we did was just to make sure that we clarify the interworking of committees of ICASA and ICASA itself, is just to clarify that. On the Triple C, the adjudicative role of the Triple C has been subject to debate and public discourse, as the Deputy Minister has indicated in the opening remarks. In this case, originally the discussion was more to align Triple C, the relationship between Triple C and ICASA, in line with what you get in the competition authorities environment, where you have the competition commission and you have the competition tribunal. But obviously further work and research must be done in that case. So we have confined the amendments in this regard to saying that the Triple C members must be appointed on a fixed term office of 3 years, and they can only be renewable for one additional term only. And that we outline furthermore the obligations and responsibilities of the Triple C, so as to improve the outcomes and the processes within the Triple C, given that it's something that has been raised by respondents in terms of the role of that Triple C and its adjudicative processes and so on. Further to that, we have, in terms of the compliance committee, we have given it more powers to ensure that even people, persons that are not licensees, but or which are in breach of the Act or the underlying statutes, anybody else can bring it a complaint or dispute to the Triple C, and the Triple C must be empowered to deal with that, even though that person isn't a licensee. In terms of the inspectors now, we are just making sure that the amendments strengthen the relationship between the council and inspectors that are appointed to investigate the complaints and other matters on behalf of ICASA, and that over and above the work that they do on a daily basis, if they have to do a search and seizure, for example, they must be able to produce a license or documents or any other documents that's required to show that they are indeed inspectors of ICASA and to undertake certain decisions as directed by the law. For transparency and administrative fairness, we are saying that the inspectors must be able to produce those documents that they have used to support the application to magistrates or for the warrants and so on. We're just setting up all those areas. Again, it's something that is raised by respondents to the amendment bill, and we are effective in this amendment. In terms of offences and penalties, once again, honourable members and honourable chairperson, we thought that the value of money since the time that the Act was passed has significantly changed. So we have ramped up the penalties for offences and so on to make it more tighter and more significant. Otherwise, we won't be able to disincentivize people that want to work outside of the ambit of the law or sector legislation. So we need to ramp that up. Where, for example, we have 250,000 rand as a fine, we've ramped those up to as much as 2 million rand, 10 million rand, and possibility of imprisonment and so on. We just feel that collectively they'll be able to disincentivize those people or licensees that wish to operate outside of the ambit of the law. So we have ramped those up and benchmarked those accordingly. And the other issues are more the transitional provisions. In cases which are no longer relevant, we have repealed those. We have, in terms of Section 24, for example, we are clarifying the fact that the provisions of the Act takes precedence over any other law except for the Constitution in relation to the regulation of broadcasting electronic communications and postal services, more importantly, and other issues such as to deal with the share title and others. We thank you very much, and we believe that all of this together will be the amendments that will bring greater transparency as well as accountability and the closer working relationship as well, between the Ministry of Communications and the department as well as the independent resources. I'd like to thank you very much.
Just two issues which are very critical to bring to your attention, which we dealt with, and maybe you may want to decide at the committee what you want us to do. One is in relation to the funding options of ICASA. It was our view as a department that maybe we defer this to the policy review, but I need to bring your attention, Chairperson, that the department did conduct a full study which brought up about four options with regards to how other regulators funded, and there is a clear recommendation there. So that work is actually ready. If the committee wants to handle that matter, we are ready to do that. The other one, Honorable Chairperson, it's the issue which can go into the general functions of ICASA, which is got to do with regulatory impact assessments being conducted by ICASA on their appropriate issues. This issue, if it were to be considered, in fact, where we had put it, was under Section 4 of the ICASA Act, subsection 3. This issue, in our consideration, Honorable Chairperson, we did consider that it will have financial exposure to ICASA, and to the extent that we are able to deal with the issues of the funding mandate of ICASA, this will be an issue that will level ICASA's responsibilities in terms of study of markets, review, and other regulatory interventions. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks very much. Any clarity question on this one? Honorable Shin.
Thank you, Jefferson. You say that this act is subservient, it's a state of the Constitution. So that means that it is imperative for us to get this act right before we actually really look at the ECA amendments. Would I be right in saying that we should prioritise ICASA? I'm looking at choices that we need to make this term. And so if we would then sort of focus on this one rather than ECA if time is a pressure.
Thank you. That was the only... Oh, on over to that.
As a committee, we have also discussed some of it in informal discussions, some in more formal meetings about the structure of the council. Obviously, the operations. Now, from some of the amendments that are being proposed in the amendment form, I think it could correct some of the concerns that we've had in terms of accountability. But the question is and still remains, regulators internationally who are effective, what is it, how big are they, what is it that they do, is there a clarity of the roles between the council or the body and the executive management, and where is it that you have your expertise, etc., etc. Now, those matters, obviously, I think it is understood that that would come through after the policy review. Now, again, we get to the point of what is it, you know, that we all understand that because we find ICASA is not effective at present, it has a very real impact on the pocket South Africans. It has an impact on business, conducting business in South Africa. It has an impact on the rollout of broadband. It has an impact on virtually everything in the sector. Do we have an indication from the Minister and the Department that if we do these corrections, it is going to make a difference to their effectiveness generally? Yes, we can bring in measures into greater accountability, greater transparency, but in the end, is the regulator going to do what their main function is with the current warm bodies that we have? So, can we perhaps just get an indication? Thank you.
Thank you. Those were the two clarities. You may respond.
Thanks, Chair. Just to start with the last question that has been put by Honourable Kilia. As far as everything that was proposed has been done, with the regulator go to deliver on his mandate with the current personnel? That's a very interesting question. But, Chairperson, I want to inform the Honourable Member that the reason why we are saying it is important that we put tighter controls in these entities is because we want to check the performance, and therefore if you fail, we are able to take action, because all we are concerned about, like yourself, is that people must do what they are getting paid to do. Second, Richard Person, we can have these amendments approved by Parliament, but if there's no extra funding to ICASA, again, we won't be able to achieve what we want to achieve, because these things go together. Hence, we say, put a legislation so that we're able to put the strategies and everything, and then we get the required results. And resourcing has always been a critical factor in the implementation of whatever that we want to achieve. We are not saying those individuals are going to change, but at least they will know this is what is expected of them. And should they not do that, this is what is going to happen. And we are backed by the law. There's no interference when we do that. The other question, was it a question? The first one, that the prioritization of the bill, having listened to the two, the Honourable Member comments that we go for the second one. As I indicated, it is up to you to agree whether the bills that you must prioritize were failed out here. Therefore, whatever that is within your power, feel free to do another pilot. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other
questions? To add to what the minister is saying, we have done actually, Honourable Killian, a study to benchmark the institutional model of ICASA against other regulators. And we've looked at the Australian one, we've looked at Ofcom, we've looked at the Indian one, the Botswana, Tanzania, as well as Malaysia, in that study. And two things are, in fact, fundamentally at the heart of the issue is that ICASA remains the only economic regulator that is also a Chapter 9 institution. So, nowhere else in the world do we see that. And it's also the only economic regulator that has got full-time counselors in terms of the board now. In other areas, you find the mixture. You've got non-executives, they don't serve there on a full-time basis and so on. And if you go and you look at the other components of ICASA, for example, and you look at best practice, the triple C, for example, is not something that must reside in ICASA itself. ICASA cannot be a referee, a player, an spectator, all at the same time. So we've got to be looking at the institutional model, including the ICASA funding, holistically. And we thought that broader strategic conversation must then happen in the ICT policy review process, but that there are quick wins in terms of maintaining governance and so on. But these issues that I've just highlighted now, in its impact over the years, will bring about more effective regulator. And this is something that also was raised in the National Development Plan, that part of the problems that we see now with ICASA being not being seen, or at least being an effective regulator, is that this constitutional independence matter, it needs to be relooked at, even though now we are moving into, or we are already in a convergence environment. But it's something that we need to confront, unfortunately, but to deal with it systematically in a more structured way, in a more disciplined way, within the process of the ICCPC review. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Except that also, the successful countries, which are South Africa, their regulators are not independent. Actual ministers are driving those changes. I think it's also an observation. So that when we deal with ICASA, probably we must talk about unbundling the regulator at one point. Because you see, all the countries are surpassing are not even independent regulators. The ministers are determining points and are pushing the transformation. But that was with the independent one, what happens, people all can buy things and other things and so on. Probably one time we'll talk about unbundling the regulator. Because it's only broadcasting is constitutional. The rest not. So probably we have to look into that. Otherwise, we can't be surpassed by regulators driven by ministers. Some of them are not independent, but they are surpassing us in terms of outcome and delivery. I think that we've got a problem which we need to look into broadly about the regulator. Honorable Mkambi.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check with the department. As to other which issues in relation to the act, in particular, that was submitted to the ship test today for this review panel. Because I know when you read the yourself, there's a lot of things that are not strongly reflected. So can you be specific with us and tell us which are ones that you have referred to the ICT review panel? Secondly, on page 14 of your slides, the issue of counselors, have you explored the possibility of reducing the number? The possibility of reducing the number of counselors. You remember some of the causes of this thing that has been happening. We really need such so many counselors. Such a big, that's what I'm trying to say, have you explored that? And also explore the possibility of them not on them being on full time and at time. I can't see clearly here from the delay. This is kind of a question. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Kira. I know I said something which might want you to be better, but it's fine.
Actually, Chairperson, you will be surprised, but I actually agree with you. Because it is clear that in terms of Chapter 9, it is broadcasting component. That is the independent component of the regulator. So obviously anybody who reads the constitution is very clear about that. So I'm not going to take issue with you about that. I just wanted to have a chat. If we look at the financing, I know that the Deputy Minister made a quick reference to that. That you also need to capacity. You know, honestly, in some instances in the past, we've been throwing more money at an ineffective institution or structure, and it did not make any change. So we must also be that in mind. But have you considered, similarly to what Alderman Dumbia said, have you perhaps considered a model to make sure that whatever they are supposed to pay over to the national fiscus in terms of licensing and spectrum fees, because currently they're under recovery. It is terrible. I mean, what they are supposed to pay over to the national fiscus and what they're actually paying over is a huge under recovery. So have you perhaps considered to also adjust that, or is that also going to be part of the policy review? Because if you can have a certain percentage of collection of licenses and spectrum fees to be retained, that incentive in itself is going to drive effective management and control. And so clearly, instead of just making more and more bodies dependent on the national fiscus, get them to start to become an effective operation so that they can actually fund through their own effective conduct sort of additional funds that they could put to good use. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nicole Drogher.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just one question on page 14. The Code of Ethics to be introduced. Is there no Code of Ethics at this stage? And then I saw something on Code of Ethics, but I can't remember the page. But who will then draw up the Code of Ethics? Thank you.
Thank you. May I respond?
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the questions that have been asked by Honourable Motambi and Honourable Chair, if you have the draft bill in front of you, you will see that in page 15.
On page 15, 1.8, we have highlighted the issues that were deferred to the ICT Safety Review. These are the following. The creation and operation of the Spectrum Management Agency, as indicated in the context of the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill that was published for public comment in July 2012. That's one thing that we have said. The second one is the working and structure of the Complaint and Compliance Commission, as the Chief Director explained. Provisions that address ownership and control in the structure, which is something that we have just spoken to, the structure, the duties and the power of the ICAS Council, including the number of the councillors that must be there at ICAS. In the study with, in the study that the Chief Director spoke about that we have conducted with regard to the funding model of ICAS, they did give us the recommendation or propose the hybrid model, which is what Honourable Killian spoke to. The issue of government funding and then allowing the regulator to keep certain license fees. But all those matters are going to be dealt by in detail by the ICT policy review. I hope I have covered. If there's anything that's left, they will respond to it. The Code of Ethics, who's going to develop a mechanism? Okay. We said the Code of Ethics is going to be by the minister as the shareholder of the regulator. Thank you.
Abuntam?
The follow-up on the page that is being referred to on page 15, the 1.8 is the first bullet, the location and operation of spectrum management agency. You mean it's another agency of DOC, but there is also for an agency with any country. That's my question. Then I will follow up.
Through you, Honourable Deputy Minister. The proposal on this particular agency actually comes from the White People on Broadcasting, which have mandated the establishment of the agency. If you consider countries like Korea, Honourable Chairman, they have certain agency which oversees and also monitor spectrum use. The challenge we have currently with ICASA, again, its monitoring capacity. This is why you have this challenge of financial collection as well, because the two goes hand in hand. So, again, also they also have, high technology monitoring equipment to be able to monitor spectrum use. So, it is that kind of an issue. But because we have deferred it, we think it is something that can be looked at more broadly, also because there are agencies within government, other authorities within government, aviation or maritime, who are actually affected by the issue. And so we need to do more work, more research on our own time to see how can this work, because a quick glance at it does mean that it's a big issue. Thank you.
Okay.
That's an example on the aviation and defense use of the spectrum. Currently, ICASA does not have, they will not have power to go to defense and ask, what is it that you're using the spectrum for? How much spectrum is used for whatever? It can only be the fiscal authority that can do that. Hence, we are saying, let us engage with all the department of stakeholders that are involved to see how it can be properly managed so that everything is taken into consideration. And if there is a need for us to clear up some spectrum, then the agency and its composition be discussed at the panel level, then recommendations of course be passed at the relevant political level, which is the cabinet or the executive. Question.
I understand the work in progress. I believe you share that we do enter the management LGBT. But the issue that now it comes back to the issue of chapter 19, I guess, was your issue of spectral management. If DOS is to take some of it and you manage it, you will know that taking away that which is from Uganda will be also undermining its independence. It's just a word of caution to say, whatever you do, must bear that in mind. Whatever you do, that don't trample on Uganda's independence. So, given its mandate.
Yeah, yeah.
Honorable Kiran Dan Muruto. Honorable Muruto.
Add a rider on to what he doesn't see. In actual fact, I wanted to ask from the department, how is it done in other countries? Does it end up to be the same? Because I think that is quite right in there. Because it's interference with the independence.
Do you want to any response?
Before the DDG or the chief director comes in, Chair. Currently we're complaining about the capacity within UNSASA in terms of delivering on what is expected of them. If you go through the amendment, Chair, actually this is one of the reasons why you had to do that much. What we are saying, does UNSASA have the capacity to plan, manage at the same time, and then tell other departments what to do, being the only player when it comes to spectrum? Why can't we say this is your role as the regulator? If you are focusing on licensing spectrum, focus on that, so that there is somebody who's going to monitor that instead of ICASA being everything. It can't monitor itself. It cannot. It can't even monitor other role players out there. Now we're saying, we think it is high time that we take that into consideration and face realities and then think about the future. What is it that we want to see out of our regulator? If we let them continue with what is currently happening, then honestly, honorable members, I don't see us achieving what we want to achieve. Because I can't be the mother, the son. It's like you are the what's that thing when you say? The Holy Ghost, the Son, all those things, it cannot be. It cannot be certain. It has to have its own mandate that they are focusing at. And that we agree, when I say we agree, all of us are involved on saying this is the route that we can take. The Special Management Agency was a proposal, as I said. Hence we are saying it requires more work to be done, taking into consideration these issues that you are raising. That's why we can't come here and tell you what is happening. It is because of that. But you are mentioning it because it was there in the thing. Thanks, Chair. If there's anything from you, feel free. Yes, again.
Probably myself to the what is the practice in other countries around you.
Very honourable Chair, I just want to take it well.
And welcome you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Members. I think the DPR made it clear that with the issue of the spectrum agents, as is outlined in the white paper, we have realized a lot of contestations now and the fact of the policy review. But the best practice in other countries, members realize that spectrum is a scarce resource. It's a scarce resource, it's like land, like water, you know. Hence today, government has created what we call a village general to build our land, how much our land worth. So we need to look at the IG resolutions as the body that directs the issues of telecommunications in our spectrum. Who allocates and manages spectrum? As soon as Africa signals those resolutions, our role is to domesticate those provisions. Currently, as members, we cannot pronounce now whether spectrum is going to be established within government or outside government, or the role of the ICASA. As the chair said, it needs a broader work, and we are doing it just like that. Confining our work to the statutes that we are in, like ITU. So I think that can address the concerns when you come back to you with the response and best practices. But in many countries, Honorable Fleur is quite right, the issue of Chapter 9 is only relevant to broadcasting. But in our view, is that because ICASA has competences on other two sectors, which is your postal and telecoms, that complicates the situation. Even in South Africa today, currently, there is not any other regulator, one which is independent, two which makes its own regulations. The deputy minister has tried. You can't be everything at once. So the defect is there. How do you solve it? So we are saying, let's look at the best practices, let's look at the IT resolutions, what they say will come back with a response that you can. But in other countries, these are government owned because of cash resources. Not money by government, but public. Thank you so much.
Maybe you must stop talking about local loop unbundling and talk about ICASA unbundling. Probably that will help. That was the final response from your side. I don't see any follow-up. Honorable?
Just to say that we will have to engage on this discussion in time to come, because the issue is convergence, and the issue is where you draw the line, and which of the other countries are you following. Rwanda, for instance, is doing very well, but they don't have a regulator. But they have, they have a benevolent dictator. Now, you can have a benevolent one, which is doing well, and then you can have a different one, which is next door up north, in Zimbabwe, and then you don't have any objective independent news operating within the confines of that country. So broadcasting television is conducted from South Africa for the people of Zimbabwe. So that is how extensive it can go. So clearly, it's a debate for the future. But we will have to engage on that debate, because the issue here is going to be, how do you manage this to such an extent that government is not politicizing scarce spectrum to limit access to that spectrum for political purposes. Thank you.
I hear that, but the fact of the matter, as we speak, countries where the ministers are driving policies in the telecoms and so on are more progressive than the independent rest of South Africa in terms of benefits for their citizens. It's a fact. Even Zimbabwe surpassed us in other areas of ICT being dictatorship, and it's a fact. Now, we've got a problem as a country, and we have to deal with this problem. We have to deal with this problem about this independent regulator, how far it must go, and how far must go government drive its own policy to give effect to its promises to South Africans and so on.
Senator, just to listen to one question, I think it was asked by Honorable Mutambi on which other countries, what's happening in other countries, it was Honorable Muradua. Murutuwa, I give him 9 kilometers, I'm not to walk. All right. Murutuwa. All right, members. Okay, just to respond to that question. Even actually, most of the countries, highly democratic countries that we think they are better than us, we agree that let's do benchmarking. I think on the USA, they have the same model that we're talking to, Tanzania, Botswana, India, Australia, UK, Malaysia. I guess what is important here is to say, out of whatever negative things that you achieve, and you will see from other countries like Honorable Kile was mentioning, a dictator next door, what is important that what is that we want to wear? It doesn't matter where we copy it from. If it is going to help us achieve what we want to achieve, I don't want to say that go back to the olden days.
Even when we were fighting for freedom in this country, the ANC, we had to get money from other people. We don't want to go there. Not because we're going to sell out, but because they were the ones that were agreeing to assist us in achieving what we want to achieve. If it needs to come to a push, we'll have to do that. But what is important? Let us say, what is it that we want to achieve? And then identify the people that can take us there. If they are devils or no devils, as long as we know how to watch devils in our country, that is important. Thank you, sir.
I don't know, thanks very much, Tim. I'm just raising those controversial issues deliberately because we need to deal with some of those issues at one point. Is it distinguished or not working? If it's not working, it's not working. I think across the... Oh, no, just the last thing from me. I would like our department, when it does a study of the world, to also remember that at the bottom of all this, remember, communication, roads, railways, all these are infrastructure as a pillar stone for economic development. Modern economies flourish on a strong base of infrastructural facilities, water, electricity, all these things. So while you're looking all that, we also want to see if the economy is doing well. You know when Rwanda was mentioned, it can be mentioned, but remember it's one of the fastest growing countries. Out of the 10 fastest growing countries in the world, 6 of them are in Africa and 1 of them is Rwanda. The other Mozambique, Ghana, Nigeria, Uganda, there are 6 altogether and they grow between 12. Nigeria is 12. Rwanda is 6%. If you compare that to us, we are what, 1.2% at the most. This is high growth, economic growth. So the economy must grow for you to have redistribution. If there's no growth, then there's nothing to redistribute. I just think, bear that in mind, that we try to work our economy so that it can create jobs and people can.
Thank you, Honorable Kekane. Thanks, President.
Just to give a briefing while they are busy preparing the machine, on the post-bank bill that we're about to present now, it's just, actually, there's just one critical thing on this one. It's just the alignment with the Banks Act. That's all we seek to do by this bill. The other thing, of course, not just align, but to ensure that we comply with whatever the Banks Act requires. Then later on, we can see what works and what doesn't. Okay. What happened now? Oh, okay. I will hand over then to Mr. Nogela. Yeah.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister. Thanks, members, are representing here the Post-Bank Amendment Bill. I think Deputy have indicated the reason why this bill has been amended. Members will remember and recall that when this bill was developed, when this act was developed, was given the basis that today will be given what you call dedicated bank acts that the post bank will apply lessons through. I think the debate that went through in this in this committee for exemptions made from the bank tax. And the National Treasury confirms that the dedicated bank bill is in advanced stage. Let's make provision that when this bank supposed to apply for a license, will use what they call dedicated bank acts because of other issues that are social related. But we are here today, the bank must listen. Dedicated bank act is not yet there. Hence, we have to provide an act. We have to go and rework on the exemptions. So I will take through the presentation that there is background, problem statements, discussions, objectives, summarized provisions, stakeholders, the process, and I conclude. The Post-Bank Act was established and signed into law on the 1st of December 2010. Became operationalized or commencement date was 22nd July 2011. The purpose thereof was one to operate the post bank division of the post office and to provide for the transfer of this enterprise of the division to a new bank or a new company. Thirdly, to provide for governance instruments that are going to guide this bank as a public entity. And further provide for operations that stipulate how this bank will apply for a banking license, as I've indicated. The problem statement, honorable members, while in the process of implementing the act, at advancing from the 22nd of July 2011, the Reserve Bank Deputy Governor wrote a submission to say, now because you are supposed to lodge for an application, there is no dedicated bank stance. Surely you must use the bank stance. Recall that there are exemptions made in the bank that we cannot comply with. So Reserve Bank as a regulator, as a functionary, they said we can only accept your application if it comes through the bank process. So everything done, all dependencies established, trying to engage on the funding model, on the issue of the corporate governance of the company, the board being established. Now what is left is for the government to go and register for the company to become the bank. Related party set. And they have to discuss with the bank. What best can we do? You are the functionary. This is your way as the regulator. That said, we can only accept, we cannot give it a federal assessment. Go the routes that in body is going through the route of the bank as a national act that governs all banking facilities. Members will realize that, you know, too, the debate that has happened in this South, matter of agency, and the head banks bill by that time was pronounced to be the bill that is going through the National Treasury, Committee of Finance, Committee of Analyzation. Now, the engagement happened between the then Minister of Communications and the Reserve Bank to say, let's implement the post-banking paradigm. We don't stop implementation, however, will be exchanges that affect the independence of the Office of Banks to ensure that these banks get the lessons in requirements. The discussions went on, the Bank Act made its admission, of the independency, the provisions that they feel that affect their autonomy in terms of the constitutions. The agreement was reached that we are going to amend the banks with the post-bank act. There are four critical issues that the Reserve Bank noted that should be covered by the Reserve Bank Act in that regard. Subsequent to those discussions, honorable members, the Reserve Bank assisted by establishing what you call legislative review committee that sets and ensures that we are able to align the bank, the post-bank act with the bank act. The committee was established, led by the BOC, the Treasury, the Reserve Bank, and the post office. And the product sitting in front of you members is a product that came out of that discussion. In fact, all these amendments were amendments that were presented by the Reserve Bank as a functional, as a regulator, who are going to determine whether post banks get a license like any other bank without any structure change. It is against this background, members, that we require that this post bank act is amended. We limit it to the area that's about the digital post office to concern to the federal company. Secondly, we remove all necessary infringement to the bank act, as being established by the Reserve Bank that we done. We remove all inconsistencies because we don't have what we call dedicated bank act, as Treasury social guide that we done. We amend any provision that may negatively affect the autonomy and the independence of public banks. So those are critical areas that we have to establish, members. The bill is divided into 14 clauses. In the first clause, we seek to delete register of bank, since it's now become obsolete, it's not going to be used when this amendment goes through. Clause 2, we amend section 3 of the Act on incorporation by the exclusion of section 7. Because we sought to say, because the white paper is postal policy, that led the MOU between the two ministers made an exemption with a view that when we exempt the post bank to comply with other provisions of the Bank Act, if the Bank Act will be the founding principles, now we have to remove that exemption, exemption of the Bank Act, that led to the post bank apply for a banking license like any other banks, and I think they are ready to do it any time from now. Clause 3, honorable members, delete section 4 of the Banks Act on the registration as a bank. To register as a bank, the post bank will require to comply with all provisions of the Banks Act with all respect. This includes consolidation provisions, which seek to evaluate the strength of the entire banking group to deal with the issues of risk, take into account all risks which may affect the bank, regardless of whether these risks are carried in their books of the bank or by the corporate company, which is also visible for that. Section 4 further move to avoid any overlaps. Whether we contract the bank, it will remove any overlaps that may happen between the two national legislations. Clause 4 is section 8 of the Banks Act, since the exemption from tax liability should be subject to money being to be done by the central treasury. Rather, going to be deleted. Clause 5 seeks to amend section 9 of the Banks Act on the powers and duties of the company. What the company can do, what the company cannot do. Now the company must satisfy all requirements of banks based on respect. Some of the powers members set up in 9 relate authority already governed by the provision of the Banks Act, so they become obsolete. We have to make sure that that provision is better. The provision overlaps with the jurisdiction of the Banks Act and also banks, which is bound to cause confusion to legal parties in the interpretation. Clause 6 inserts an additional requirement in section 18 of the Post Bank Act. It seeks to make it clear that no person shall be appointed or remain as a board member if such person is not fit and proper to hold office as a member of a board of a banking institution in terms of the Bank Act. In fact, it does make a pronouncement to say nobody can sit as a board member of the post bank or a bank without satisfying the registrar's consent as a fit and proper. They must go through that scrutiny to ensure that the suitable boards that can manage the bank. So 7-6 amends the provision of the Post Bank Act to remove reference to fit and proper and the required concurrent register of banks. This provision is not required anymore due to this amendment. What the register of banks will do will only do it fit and proper when the post bank apply for a license. He cannot do a fit and proper now. What he will do, he will wait for an application of the bank with the members of the board and the executive, and they can perform fit and proper on that basis. Clause 8, delete section 52E, so long as it's valid, since there's an additional section, 1H. That clause 9 says to amend section 18 to make it clear that the MD of the post bank must be fit and proper to hold the office of the CEO of a banking institution, as required in terms of bank. These are just pronouncements that those don't depend the law. However, the registrar is compelled, because of his independence, to ensure that the MD goes through the fit and proper. But however, it's a matter of emergency in this legislation. Whereas plus 10 members seek to amend the 25 to ensure that the powers of the minister to intervene fall away once the company is registered as a bank institution. We had a very strong argument and discussion going on these provisions. But however, in terms of the Banks Act, all powers that present issue of intervention rest with the Register of Banks and the Reserve Act. So we're taking away the power that the Minister has in terms of intervention. She can only intervene at the time that the company is not yet corporatized. So that power is fall away.
And we are going to...
It is necessary that provisions such as Section 69A of the Banks Act provide clear guidelines for address 1. Mismanagement, non-compliance, or areas of material maladministration that apply to registrations. Once the post bank is registered as a bank, there will be no restrictions on the application of the Banks Act. We have to settle the post office control company, made it clear to them. Are you ready to ensure that this provision that we made a commitment, that yes, we are ready? Though from our initial view, as I said, the policy pronounce, MOU pronounce, however, we said if the Delegated Bank Act gets promulgated as soon as possible, that can assist the post bank to get a special treatment from the Reserve Bank. But however, this provision shows that the post bank act must apply the bank's act in its totality. So powers of the minister fall away. The powers of the Register of Banks comes in. The benefit is experience. The Reserve Bank has experience managing banks in that regard. As a result, we can even benefit from that. Consider the first amendment to 26 of post bank that remove the requirement that the minister must make policy. All required banks are expected to adhere to regulations and banks, which are federal laws of the banks. All banks comply with the regulations. There are no special treatments. In our view, we thought our minister can make regulations, but the minister says no. Before I look at your applicable lessons, remedy the defects. Make sure that I make regulations, not your minister. Now, the mission of the Office of Banks is one to promote the soundness of domestic banking system through the effective and efficient application of international regulation, regulatory and supervision standards and practices. Requiring cabinet to approve policies and any further change the policies is not in line with good practice and may result in confusion, multiple lines of responsibility, and may also aggravate the problem through a slow and rapid response. You know, the Register said, I will make regulations. Requiring cabinet to make policies is not the best practice in the banking system. Independent regulation must exercise its role in the future. Banks, chairperson, who are sitting here. But as I said, the work must stop. The work is going on. Amendment is going on. The bank is ready to apply for a license using the bank's rules. But the Register wants to see a commitment from government whether the post bank has been amended to satisfy the spirit of the bank. Clause 12 seeks to insert new sections 26A It provides that in the event of any conflict between the provisions of Ban Act and the Post-Ban Act, the provisions of the Ban Act shall prevail. Our initial argument was, because the Post-Ban Act is going to be a law that governs banking practices within the African environment, when it contradicts the Security Ban Act, our Post-Ban Act shall prevail. But because of the welcome that we're hearing, David Ben's head is not there. So you cannot compare the Post-Ban Act with the national law, which governs all general financial institutions. So the Ban Act shall prevail, which means it makes a legal interpretation with the sound, because the Ban Act is national law. Our Post-Ban Act is specific law, specific to Post-Ban operation within the African environment. Members, prospecting to amend Section 8 of the Post-Ban, it is shown that any exemption under the incentives applicable to the Post-Ban date, the present transfer date, shall apply to the Post-Ban until it is declared a bank. This is to ensure that the Post-Ban continues to operate as a division of the Post Office until its registration as a bank through the Bank Act of Payments. And clause 14 provides a short title. And I think that provided an indication of some of the bill. The department consultant, but finance, one consultation went through them. Secondly, also part of the committee that drafted the bill. The reserve bank, they were also part of the committee. They made a submission. I think a little paid submission that is that. The post office, the post bank division of the post office, the bill was published for government gazette public comments. The process that we followed with the consultation with all these consulting stakeholders, the bill was presented to the Economic Sectors and Employment Cluster on April 2018, and the Cabinet Committee on 18 June and 2016-2018. In that regard, the bill was adopted and approved. In conclusion, Honorable Chairperson, we are here to align this legislation, the Deputy Minister said, with the Bank Act, to ensure that we must check all other issues to comply with the process. As I said, the work does not stop when the Registrar raises the flag. We work parallel, but I expect that as soon as this law gets through this process, it becomes a legislation to ensure that we're able to move. Secondly, is to ensure that the vision that was set up in the policy get implemented through those stages of the presidential processes. And lastly, to ensure that now the bank moves to the third layer of the state. When you move to the third layer, compliant with all the bank's requirements, it becomes an independent organized bank in that regard. That's my short presentation, Honorable Chair and members. I thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, clarities, or simple straightforward on our worksheet?
Thank you. I'm wondering why this presentation is marked confidential.
Again, I'm in a legal advice, I am, so I'm being advised. Connor will get that noted. You can speak, Honorable Kevin.
Okay, I wasn't sure what noted means. You know, when you get this presentation, what I find to be helpful, like when we discuss in CASA, is for the presenter department to say, in very solid terms, look, we have studied this, we have looked at good practice, we have looked at our own situation, and out of all this, because it can be research, it can be a study for the sake of research. If there are four modules, this is a module or a combination of things that we recommend, so that we get a solid recommendation that you can focus our attention on. at times I find it well just to listen to a long presentation with very good ideas, many of them. Ultimately, those ideas must come together and help us take a decision to what we think according to best practice in the world, or a combination. Usually, it is a combination of factors. You don't just get a patent and peer thing in a module. You'd say this is the main module, but we think we can add or subtract a bit from it. That way we have, out of four modules, this particular one that we advise to focus on, and motivation reasons will be given. And as a result, that is a very enabling environment for us to take decisions. Now, even with the postbank, like I've said, I think it has been discussed for a very long time. We need to conclude. The woman has been pregnant for a long time. The baby must be delivered. And that can only happen if we get solid recommendation. For as long as it is in the interest of the poor, for me, it links the avenues and the rural area. We can exchange money, pass money from a high concentration of resources like avenues to the villages where you never get an auto bank or an ABSA bank, but the post bank, the post office is there, and it can facilitate that. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Honorable Killen. Which women are you talking about?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that I'm not that woman. Chair, can I just say that if we look at this one, and it is true that it's been in the realm of Parliament for some time, I just want to say that this is what makes us look bad as a father. It is because those of us who were involved in the processing of the Post Act, there was very little difference between political parties of what needs to be done. But there were concerns, and very legitimate concerns, raised during that period. And we asked the question, why the rush? First of all, Chairperson, you will recall, we wanted to have engagement with the PC on finance, or television on finance. We wanted to engage on exclusion, you know, the Dedicated Banks Act. We wanted to have clarity about when it's going to be passed. We said, but if you look at the Act, quite frankly, the Act that was passed on the 1st of December 2010, it's quite a clumsy piece of legislation. Now, let's be honest, but we wrote in additional matters, such as the minister to decide in consultation or after consultation or in concurrence with the Minister of Finance, because we wanted to avert some declaration of independence from banks at that stage. And there was a void within which we had to pass the legislation. But at the same time, we knew that these sort of banking institutions did not always have a very good reputation. So we wanted to bring in some measures. Looking at it, I want to say that those of us who raised concerns during that time, we hate to say it, but we actually have to say we told you so, that now we're sitting almost three years down the line, and we haven't had implementation because there are weaknesses. We thought we could operate something different to what the Banks Act provided for, and now the governor of the Reserve Bank had to come back. The whole issue of exemption from paying tax, you can't. It's a money bomb. Those sort of things. Now, Chairman, all I'm saying is I think it's good that it's here, but this time around, we must make sure as portfolio committee that we do it right. We must get the right backing information, because we are a people's parliament. We're not all supposed to be 150% okay with banking legislation. We must get the experts to tell us, yes, this is going to be good, this is going to be a sound institution, you will protect the public's money, because that is what it is about. It's about providing access to banking institution to people who are still used to using the post office for their little bit of money that they want to deposit. But we must safeguard those deposits. So I think, in principle, it's good that we're here. I would argue that it is one of those pieces of legislation that probably should be processed as priority. But it is important for this committee to this time get it right, so that we don't just rely on departmental legal advisors and officials. Yes, good to have them as well, but we also need, as a parliament, we need to know what we're passing will stand the test of time, will stand the test of legalities, and will bring about an institution that is accountable and that has the right people, the right staff, as prescribed by the Banks Act, to in fact take this bank forward and to make a decision. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks very much. You may respond.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My very first response should be the second question raised by Honorable Killen. I think it is not correct to say the committee has passed the clumsy bill. I'm not a spokesperson of the committee. But Honorable Kino remember that there was a meeting in this room where a senior official from Treasury at the DDG level came to present DDG Momonia. When they make an undertaking that this post bank, it does satisfy the Village Bank bill. So this committee made that law on the pretext that as soon as the bank post bank gets passed, the Village Bank bill will also be promulgated. Now, it does that from a DOC point of view, we have to move very fast implementing the post bank as currently as it is right now. There are no wrong issues in that. It's only that now, because the focus has changed, we must now comply with a different piece of legislation, which is called the Banks Act. So there are only four issues, Honorable Killen. The clumsy, the only four issues. The first issue, one, remove the power of the minister to make policies. Two, minister cannot make regulations. Three, minister cannot be a shareholder in terms of the company law. Remember, by that time, the company law was being amended at the same time. So this law was the first law that was passed the same time as the company law. The company dictates that the post office must become a controlling company. And indeed, they must do that. It means they must also satisfy all the banking requirements as a company. So on those four issues, Honorable Killen, I think I feel of the view that if the Village Banks Act was passed, this was going to be one of the best pieces of law that this committee has passed. Thank you so much, Chair President.
As is a backup person, you can proceed. Yes?
The reference, Mr. Killen has now reminded me that there's an interesting one that I was wondering if that is still applicable, and that is made reference to the Companies Act. That is section 2028. So that is remaining unaffected, unchanged. It remains in place. I just wanted to have clarity about that, Chairperson. And then secondly, the bank, the new post bank, will it report to the Minister of Communication or will it report to the Minister of Finance?
Thank you. That's a good question. When the Reserve Bank Governor made the submission, we had a very long meeting with Post Office, National Treasury, and so on, to say, now let's talk reporting lines. Precisely your question. Now, when you talk about risk and regulations, the post bank will report to the Register of Banks. Don't report the DOC. No. The register of bank says, I'm not going to give you any assessment. You report with all the requirements like anybody else. We said, are you prepared to do that? They wrote a letter to say we are prepared. Now, on administration, the report you will see, your administration. But in terms of regulations, compliance, and requirements, and risk issues, those issues are now out of miscommunications. I think you've seen where we're saying we're removing all the powers of miscommunications. Those powers now vested in the domain of the Register of Banks. So now they've got two masters. You have to comply with the PMA and comply with the bank set on the advance. So that is the difference. Communication will look at the PMA side. Register of Banks with the Banks Act regulations and all other legislation. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There's no question which is left. They are all answered to. Except that Honorable Kirkane wanted the benchmarking. What are the best practices in other countries in relation to this matter? So probably we can just quickly talk to us.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The benchmarks were done. Recently, I think we also was at, it's around April this year, Nigeria and Malaysia, and Mali, the benchmarks. Now, in other countries, the post banks, they don't operate as autonomous banks. They operate as division of ministries, or of post offices, or post administrations of those countries, where you find minister now dictating terms and principles. Now, in other countries like South Africa, our policy made three layers to say the first layer, deposit taking. The second layer, you are a division. The third layer, become autonomous. Now they are not becoming autonomous. They must report to the Register of Banks. Same with other developed countries, where you are supposed to then report to the central banks in that regard and comply with the banking requirements. So in South Africa, in fact, we'll put the stage where the post bank must report a minister, like any other countries. In any other countries, a minister is a regulator, is also an operator. So it means the minister is a post-bank operator and also a central government at the same time. So he reports, or she reports himself, etc. In the case of Brazil, it's the same thing. You know, the minister there is a postmaster general, is a minister, is a regulator at the same time. So it's a CASA and post office and government at the same time. So in our area, because of democracy and because of the rule of law and the independence of three branches of state, we have realized that this cannot be a good model, that by means of communications becoming a central government precisely for the post bank. So use the benefit of the country that we have with the governor of the Reserve Bank. So reporting lines are quite clear. We look, one, in the model of administration, regulation is supposed to be independent, like in other banks. No treatment, no special treatment that is done. So I think those models are well clear. We couldn't realize that in our case, they may cause a lot of cooperation problems in South Africa if post-bank can become a model that becomes a division in the Ministry of Communications like in other countries. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that will conclude the post-bank limited amendment bill. Members, it's way after one, but I'm not sure what is the time. I'm sure it's way out. And we have the South African Post Office limited amendment, which we must also deal with. But I think we have to pray for lunch and then reconvene later. I was told that there's finger lunch or something. Which has been asked. What time can we come back, members? Can we promise, I'm not what's the time now.
It's 4 o'clock.
So, can we come back?
there is 2 o'clock, there's quarter to 2. 45 minutes. Quarter to 2. Okay.